Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
I'm Michelle Martin, and we are continuing to understand how investors think. Last week, we examined how an investor would value a tech stock. One was kind enough to look into his actual portfolio to share with us a case study of the metrics that he looks at to do just that. Today, does the personality and the leadership of a company's founder matter? How can an investor examine this dimension of a company, management, leadership? Later on, we're going to take a look at an IPO that many investors are very excited about, kicking off tonight, the Snowflake IPO, and you are going to hear one strategy of approach. I'm speaking with Jonathan Ang, growth investor and author of Expand Your Circle of Competence. Good morning, John.
To be here again, Michelle.
Great to speak with you. So last time we talked about the key metrics that you use, John, to assess a tech stock in your portfolio. Today, I'm keen to get a sense of how investors assess management, because we were talking, you know, you and me, John, and you mentioned that the founders of the company are what you look into as well. The people who started a company, it's something that you do as an investor. So I thought we would unpack that today with a couple of case studies. So John, maybe you could pick from a founder that you've met or from a stock in your portfolio that can help us understand why the origin story, why someone has founded a business, is something that's important to you as an investor.
Right. So I think the idea of looking at management came into my framework when I heard about this CEO. He's called Mr. Salim, and he's actually the CEO of MeetUpBee. So what MeetUpBee does is they actually sell very, very high-tech ovens or high-tech fryers that you see in Domino's Pizza, for example. So basically, MeetUpBee designed a new pizza oven back then for Domino's Pizza that cook pizza 25% faster and reduce electricity costs by 30%. All right, so one really very interesting thing about Mr. Salim, which is the CEO of MeetUpBee, he actually, when he went into the company was actually in a mess, right? The company wasn't doing well. You had a lot of competitors trying to sell the same ovens. All right, so the company was in kind of like facing a financial crisis. In fact, it had a pretty huge debt. So what Mr. Salim did was that because he was so confident about the company, even though he was the CEO, he wasn't the owner of the company. He was just a hired management, right? He actually sold his own house and he used that money to actually save the company, even though he was an outsider. All right, so I don't know about you guys, but if I'm an investor and I see a CEO selling his house that he just built to save a company, it tells me something, right? It tells me that the CEO is very, very confident about this company and he has this confidence, or, you know, he's pretty confident that he can execute very well in the next 5 to 10 years. Otherwise, why would he put his own money in? So for me, this story was very impactful, and that was where I decided, you know, actually, why is a business producing good numbers, right? Why is a business model so smart, right? It all boils down to the management of the business. So in a sense, you know, when I look at buying companies, I'm kind of buying management as well. Right. So, you know, if you think about it in a horse race, right, even though you have the best horse, but if you don't have a good jockey, right, you're not going to win the race. So other than buying a good horse, which is the business, we have to find someone who's a good jockey, right, to run the business, to steer the business into good places. Yeah.
And how did MeetUpBee's CEO do in that role? So from 2001, was it, until now, and you look at the company that he's helped grow, what stands out for you?
Right. So he was able to do like 50 acquisitions, and this was unheard of from 2000, all right, when he came on as a CEO, all the way to 2018, right? That was the statistics that I have. And, you know, 50 over acquisitions, that's insanely crazy. And for shareholders who stayed with him through to 2000 till today, they would have made 100 times their money by investing into the company. So having a good founder actually is very, very important, because the way they communicate with you, even through your earnings call, you can tell the difference, right, between a founder who is very clear on where he wants to go and a founder who's just kind of like warming the seat, you know, just who's just there for the sake of the COP, and after 5 years, you know, he will just go off to another company. It's very, very obvious the way they speak, right? When they speak, they will actually use more words like long-term, right? They won't really care about the analysts on Wall Street, right? They won't care about short-term performance, right? They will actually look at things from a more long-term perspective.
Were you one of those investors who managed to reap that 100x return?
Unfortunately, no, because this was the first ever company that made me want to really look at management and put it part of my investing framework.
Oh, boy. All right. Yeah. So was there a company that has made it into your portfolio who's perhaps founder that you were able to meet personally?
Right. So previously, I actually invested into this company called China Maple Leaf. It actually was part of my portfolio. So I actually went down to China. I flew all the way down to China to find out what the founder was doing. And there was something that was very interesting with this, right? Because so China Maple Leaf is actually a series of high schools in China. And what they do really well is to help Chinese students go into the top Ivy League schools in the US. Mm-hmm. All right. So if you're a Chinese parent, you do not want to stress out your kids by putting them into the Chinese national exam, which is called Gaokao in Chinese. It's a very stressful exam. So nowadays, more Chinese parents are getting more modern. And they also want their kids to go abroad to the US so that they can be bilingual, right? Because, you know, US and China, they are both the rising powers. It will help a lot if you understand English and Chinese. So what Sherman Jen did was, before he founded the school, all right, he actually was a very successful businessman. So he was doing business in Canada. And one day, his daughter actually fell down the stairs, right? And it was a very bad fall. And I think she was bleeding in her head. And his wife actually ran out of the house to call for help, right? But then his wife didn't understand a single word of, couldn't speak a single sentence of English, right? So what happened was a Canadian couple was driving in the car, and they actually saw the wife running out of the house. And without speaking a single word or exchanging words, you know, they actually immediately asked the wife and the daughter to actually get into the car. And that's where this Canadian couple sent the daughter actually to the hospital, right? And, you know, when Sherman knew about this, he was very touched, right? And he also felt that there was one problem that a lot of Chinese people do not understand English, can't speak English or can't understand English, right? So he wanted to solve this problem. And he was also very grateful with how sincere and how nice the Canadian people were. So he actually established a school in China, all right? And he worked very closely with the Canadians to actually set up a school that's accredited to the Canadian BC system, all right? And that's where he got started with his business, right? So after hearing his story, it felt like he started his business not because of money, right? Because if it was because of money, he would not have left his business and, you know, started a school in China. And back then, you know, it was so hard to start a school in China, especially when you're talking about bringing the Canadian system into China, because China back then was still slightly, you know, communist, and, you know, bringing in Western ideas was seen as kind of like a taboo, right? So he was, you could tell that he was actually driven by something more than money, which is what I like when I look at companies, you know, or founders who actually start a company with a purpose, right? So that's where I invested in China Maple Leaf. And from there, I actually exited because I found out about higher growth companies like SaaS companies.
Okay. So you're not necessarily looking for the charismatic CEO, because those can spin really great origin stories. You know, we all know people that we get caught up in the web of their storytelling. You're specifically looking for commitment and ability to grow the business.
Yes, that's right.
All right. And in the space of the SaaS companies, which we've been following with you, was there a founder that stood out?
Yeah, so founder that stood out was CrowdStrike, and I think CrowdStrike is something that is a company that does antivirus, so they actually secure your computer for the cloud. And I like founders that are value, what I call purpose-driven. In a sense, they really want to add more value. They want to do things better, right? And they start a company because of that. Mm-hmm. So one really very relatable example can be, is actually Elon Musk, right? I mean, Elon Musk wanted to bring humanity to space, to Mars, and he just wanted to do things better. Even when he started his boring company, which is to dig tunnels under Vegas, under LA, to actually ease traffic congestion, right? He's always thinking about how we can do things better, right? You talk about Tesla, right? It's not really about trying to profit from electric cars, but he really wanted Earth to have lesser carbon emissions, and he wanted to do things better, faster, and easier, right? So for CrowdStrike, it's almost kind of like the same thing. So Josh Kurtz, which is the CEO, was actually a CTO in McAfee, right? So this guy was highly paid, you know, you're a chief technical officer. You don't have to leave a job, right? I mean, you're kind of stable and, you know, everything is going well for you. You're paid really, really well. So McAfee back then was one of the top giants in the antivirus, in the space of antivirus in that industry. And one thing that stood out to George was where one day he was actually waiting. He was actually on a plane, right? And he saw one of the passengers in front of him, right, loading up his computer. And when he loaded up his computer, he had to wait for his McAfee antivirus to load for 15 minutes. And to George, he asked himself, how can I do things better? Why did the poor guy have to wait 15 minutes, load up his computer before he can do any work? That's such a waste of time.
Yeah.
And I think maybe because of red tapes or bureaucracy or something like that, probably George couldn't make things better in the way that he wanted it to be, right? So he decided to leave the company and to start CrowdStrike. So CrowdStrike is something that, you know, you don't have to wait for the virus, sorry, the antivirus software to scan through your computer before you can use your computer. It's always on the back end, and it uses lesser than 1% of your CPU time, right? So basically, George reinvented the whole infrastructure on how cybersecurity should be done, right? And he really took a leap of faith, right, to leave his high-paying job. I bet he's paid more than a few million dollars, I mean, being a CTO at McAfee, to take a risk and to want to do things better by starting CrowdStrike. So that really stood out to me, right, that, you know, hey, this guy wasn't, I mean, yes, he's nothing is free in the world. He probably will be paid well. But I mean, this guy is really more than just money, right? He really wanted to do things better. He really wanted to advance the world of cybersecurity. So that is something that really stood out for me, right, for Josh Kurtz, the CEO of CrowdStrike.
Well, thanks, John, for helping us understand how you as an investor look at management and how that factors into your investment decisions. Now, you're going to be pretty busy tonight, aren't you? Because Snowflake's going to hit markets. It already has two high-profile backers in filings last week. Snowflake announced that Berkshire Hathaway and Salesforce have both bought about $250 million worth of the company's stock. So I wonder, John, if you can share with us your game plan for Snowflake.
Right. I think for Snowflake, what stood out really well for me was the CEO. So the CEO is someone who is not just there to, I mean, for fun, or he's not just someone who is new to the scene. In fact, the CEO was once the CEO of ServiceNow. If you guys actually, I'm pretty sure some of you probably know about ServiceNow, right? It's basically it's a SaaS company that deals with workflow management. Probably you'll use ServiceNow with some of your softwares like Workday, Salesforce, so on and so forth,
right?
And he brought ServiceNow from a revenue of $100 million to $1.4 billion. And this guy, he was also the CEO of Data Domain, right? And he sold his company for $2.4 billion. So this guy is actually a tech veteran, right? He actually knows how to do things properly in a very scalable manner. And that is why you can see probably he's the guy who is instrumental for bringing Snowflake to IPO. And I always like to say, right, if any companies that can raise money right now, they're raising money when the economy when the economy is in such a great time of uncertainty, right? So the fact that you can raise money now, it shows that somehow you have great connections, right? You really have that strong ability to execute. So you see the companies that are listing right now, most of them are really pretty solid and good companies, right? So for that, and looking at the CEO of Snowflake, I think that this company will be in good hands, right? Because, you know, Frank Slootman, which is the CEO of Snowflake, he didn't come out of retirement for fun, right? Mm. I mean, this guy, he already has lots of money. He's paid so well at his time in ServiceNow, and, you know, as a CEO of Data Domain, right? He didn't have to come back, right? The fact that he come back shows that, you know, this is something really more than money. And the fact that he was able to get Salesforce, right, and even Berkshire Hathaway, you know, even though this trade wasn't done by Warren Buffett, it was done by his general Todd, I think that this company definitely has the ability to execute. So moving on to the price, right? Mm. So basically, recently, they actually revised the IPO price, if I'm not wrong, from $75 to $85 range to the $100 to $110 range. $120 range. Mm. Okay. So to me, I feel that there's a lot of hype around this IPO.
Right.
Not because the company is lousy or the company is not fundamentally grounded. Right. If you understand the tech, you understand the business, you will understand that this business is a solid business. Right. The fundamentals is great. You know, their retention rates are great. You know, they are growing their revenues at 121%. Right. There's nothing wrong with the fundamentals, in my opinion. And by the way, I'm not vested. I didn't get the IPO shares. Didn't manage to get it, right? So I'm not vested yet. Just a disclaimer.
Will and, you be though? Is there a buy point that you're going to be looking at entering?
Right. So this is my game plan, right? Mm. So I will, if the price is right, right? I'll elaborate what is the right price later. If the price is right, I'll actually enter a 3% stake into Snowflake, right? Why 3%? Because this is, after all, an IPO stock. There's a lot of growth that's already being priced in.
Right.
The market is expecting Snow. So at a price of $110, the market is actually expecting Snow to grow at 80 to 100% for the next year. All right. So if they do not execute, right, you will see the stock price falling through the roof. All right. So what I want to do is I want to have a foot through the door and execute and buy as the company execute. All right, so I want to see at least some track record before I even add more and let this company become a core position. All right, so this is my game plan. If the price hovers around $110 to maybe $150, I'll maybe put in some, put in a starting position. But if it goes beyond, you know, between $150 to $170, I may just want to hold out and wait for a while, because at a price of $150 to $170, we are assuming that Snowflake has to grow at 100%, otherwise you'll be overpaying for this company. All right, and I think this is really quite a tall order. In a sense, even if Snowflake were to grow at 100% the next year, you won't really be making a lot of money, because, you know, the price and the growth is already priced in.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to share something, right? There's no point in you know, being FOMO, right? There's no point in fearing that you'll miss out. Right, FOMO is a fear of missing out.
Yeah, people hear this is the biggest US IPO of the year. Time in the market is more important than timing the market. And so they think, I need to get in tonight. But you say FOMO is, put that aside.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's just do a thought experiment, right? If Snow is what it claims to be, it has a huge total addressable market, it has high potential growth, right? Even if you miss the first 3 years, you can still make a heck lot of money if you invest 3 years later. So it's just like how if you miss Amazon for 10 years from year 2000 to year 2010. Mm-hmm. Even if you invest in 2010 till now, you still be laughing your way to the bank, right? So I don't know, right? So sometimes it's about balancing that certainty with a reward, right? So right now we kind of have some certainty, but not very, very high certainty, right? And the reward may be very high. But for me, you know, I always like to look at, you know, what is the worst case scenario? Mm-hmm. So let's say if I have someone who is going to pay me $1 million to put a pistol to my head, and that pistol has $1 million, or what we call a barrel that contains 1 million bullets, right? So it's kind of like a roulette that has a 1 in a million chance of you being killed, let's say, if you pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though if someone pays you $1 million, I will not even pull the trigger, right? Because if I was wrong, right, the outcome will be deadly.
Yeah.
Right. I wouldn't live to invest another day.
Mm.
Yeah. So
opportunity cost too high. Yeah.
Exactly, right? So for me, it's always knowing about the worst case scenario. And now it's kind of a bit, I wouldn't say it's kind of overhyped because of the fundamentals, but I would say overhyped because of the valuations.
Yes.
Right? And,
$33 billion you're looking at if it's valued at $120 per share. And some might be wondering, why not take indirect exposure? Since Berkshire Hathaway and Salesforce are backing it, why not buy shares in them?
So I think it's not so straightforward because you know, the big boys have already taken their positions.
Mm-hmm.
So when the market opens, I do not think that the price will be at $110. If it's at $110, that's where I'll take a position. I'll take a 3%, take a small position, and I'll slowly buy as they execute along the years, right? But I just think that it's quite impossible for... I think it's unlikely that the stock price will stay at $110 after the IPOs because of, you know, so many... There's so much hype. And I think there's a lot of investors who are not really educated. They're just rushing into it, right? You have your Robinhood traders.
Mm.
You have a lot of these traders that just want to go in for the quick money, right? But if you're like me, you want to do it long-term, right? There's no harm waiting, right? There's no rush.
Worth noting that John is a growth investor, so he buys to hold for years to come. John, great insights. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on your game plan for Snowflake and learning how you assess management when it comes to companies for your portfolio. Great speaking with you as always, John. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
He's Jonathan Ang, growth investor and author of the book, Expand Your Circle of Competence.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.